Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Team, a weekly program for teens, families, educators, and other interested folks. We dive into the issues that shape, shake, and shift our everyday lives, from classrooms to courtrooms, headlines to hallways. We unpack what matters. Here on 411 Teen, we have the next generation that doesn't just inherit the conversation, they lead it. From the classrooms of James S. Rickards High School International Baccalaureate Program, a dynamic collective of student voices breaking down the headlines, challenging assumptions, and redefining what it means to be informed in today's political landscape. Politics Wrap, where informed voices, critical thinking, and real conversation come together on 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me via the Zoom platform, I welcome, if you will all introduce yourselves, and let's start with student producers first, please.
Hey guys, I'm Amaga Charya. I'm a senior at James S. Rickards High School, and I'm also a producer for the 411 Teen Club here at Rickards. And yeah, pretty excited for this taping because we haven't had a taping in a while.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And we're going to miss you because Amag is graduating, correct?
Yeah, right. Hopefully.
Oh, you're going to graduate. I know. Okay. Next one.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kaylee John, and I'm a current sophomore at James F. Rickards High School. I'm really excited for this taping, too. It's really been a while. I think the fun fact I want to start for this taping is I have 3 finals left, and then that's it.
Great. Anne?
Hey, everyone. My name is Hasra Kula. I'm a sophomore at James S. Rickards High School, and I'm also super excited for exams to be over and for summer to finally start, longly awaited. And I'm so excited for today's taping.
Shauna?
Hi, my name's Ashana. I'm a sophomore at Rickards, and like everyone's been saying, summer is almost here, and I'm so excited for that.
And Grace.
Hi, my name is Grace. I'm a current junior at Rickards High School, and this is my first taping, so I'm really excited to be here.
Well, welcome to all of you. This episode centers on how policy, politics, and perception shape reality for young people, from what students are allowed to learn to who is protected under the law, to how leaders use imagery to influence public opinion. Today's program is more than a conversation. It's a reality check. What are we allowed to learn? Who gets protected under the law? And how far is too far when politics meet religious beliefs? My opening question is, what is the purpose of general education? Is it exposure or comfort?
I think it's for exposure. I think oftentimes the more we know about the world and what's going on, we start to think about it more. And I think that's where the whole idea about censoring comes up. Like when we read books in middle school and stuff about, oh, Fahrenheit 451 or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. It's all about censoring and how knowing more is dangerous. But I think as a society, it's not really, the education isn't really as much like, oh, it's an enlightenment, as much as it is that you should be aware about what's going on and you have to put it to use. And sometimes the truth hurts, but it's something that is necessary for our society.
Okay. Mag, what do you think? Where are you sitting on this?
Wait, what exactly was your question
again? Well, I really just wanted to know the purpose of a general education curriculum. Is it exposure or is it for comfort?
Well, what exactly do you mean by comfort?
Well, making you feel good if it was comfort. I mean, you'll see what I'm getting to in a minute, okay?
Okay, I guess, yeah. But I guess like when I think of general education, I guess I go with exposure because I guess the point of general education is to expose kids at a young age to like a variety of different subjects and see which ones they're interested in. I guess like building the foundation to knowledge, but also like knowing how to gain knowledge, if that makes sense. Yeah, I guess that's what I think of education.
Okay. All right. Let's hear from someone else.
I would say that education should be about exposure as well, because education is essentially all about learning new things that make you grow more wrinkles on your brain, you know? It just like our education system should focus on making students learn the fundamentals and learning things that'll actually be useful in day-to-day life, and as well as different like all of our core subjects like science, history, English, language arts, etc.
Okay.
Yeah, education is definitely more for exposure because it's for general education in general is for everybody to have a baseline to go off of. So everyone has like an equal vantage point to start off of, instead of somebody just having a little bit of knowledge in one thing, but a lot in the other or things like that. Everybody has an equal basic founding of something or a topic in education or anything like that. Maybe when it comes to exposure, it goes to life or just general rules that everyone needs to follow. General education is just for a way for people to be on the right track and have an equal understanding of something.
Okay.
For me personally, I think there is, in fact, like general education is for exposure, but there's also like a comfort that you gain from knowing certain things and becoming educated, in my opinion. And that's why I feel like it's not like two extremes, but like they go together, like exposing yourself to and like gaining knowledge through education isn't just like simply like knowing the foundations, but it's also gaining comfort in knowing and knowing that you can learn and knowing that you can think about the world in different perspectives.
Okay. Well, let's look at where ideas are supposed to be explored freely in the classroom. And what I'm referring to now is you may be aware that the State Department of Education has eliminated sociology. Okay. You no longer can, major in sociology. It's eliminated it from the curriculum. So that's the impetus for this discussion. So if ideas are supposed to be explored freely in the classroom, is education supposed to challenge us? Or again, is it for our comfort? Is it
No, I
we don't
think.
want to rock, the boat so much? Okay, go right ahead.
No, I think it is to challenge us. I think in a way they're trying to like stimulate our brains like as we grow up, you know, so that we are capable of learning more when we are older. But I do think it's interesting that they banned studying sociology just because, you know, it gives people a better understanding of how the world should look like when you're older. I feel, especially in this day and age, a lot of people lose an idea of, oh, this is conventionally how it's supposed to be, you know? And oftentimes people let a lot of things pass where they should have stopped themselves and been like, wait, that's not okay, and things like that. I think in a way, challenging oneself to understand whether or not something should or should not be occurring, or like trying to understand something is, you know, like the purpose of education.
Okay. Other comments? Because this happened, oh, I guess, what was it, last month? March, April, the education officials removed sociology, introductory sociology, from the core curriculum. And that's the general education requirements in all 12 public universities and state colleges, okay?
Is this just like for introduction courses, or is it also like included for people who want to major in sociology?
Well, I guess you can, I don't know whether you can major in it or not. It reclassifies the course as an elective, okay? So therefore, that's where it's at, okay? It's the introduction of sociology is no longer a core curriculum course. It remains available, I believe, as, you know, you can take it as an elective, or you can have it as a major or a minor. So you can major and minor in it, okay? But as far as the, it used to be a core course, like you used to have to take intro psychology and intro sociology. It no longer is required, okay?
Wait, so do they provide any reasoning behind doing so?
I don't know the, no, not that I am aware of. Okay. It's just, you know, they want to get away from indoctrination of progressive ideology. I guess that's the best way I could say it. So they want to control what's being taught.
Personally, I think that education, yeah, is like made to challenge us and made to like push the bounds of like what the human can do. And by banning like intro sociology classes, it's closing the doors to that, those ways of thinking and those areas of thinking. Mm-hmm. Now kids are like no longer able to think about, oh, do I want to like further study this and learn about the like the bounds of humans and like thinking about society and, you know, like potentially like this is blocking innovation from happening because kids are no longer like enforced to learn about other perspectives and other like ways of thinking. And I think it's like kind of going against what education should really be about, which is to challenge us and which is to foster those new ways of thinking. But by banning courses like this, it's, you know, closing those doors and not letting education be what it was made to do.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to take a break at this point, but let me pose this question to you before we go. If we limit what is taught, does that shape the way people look or believe as far as tomorrow is concerned? Because they haven't been exposed to it. Hold your thoughts. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. Just tuning in, you are connected to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and this is the Politics Wrap edition. We are talking about the elimination of sociology as a core curriculum in all the public, 12 public universities. And my question I pose to the team is, can limiting what is taught shape today what people will believe tomorrow? Do you think, what do you think limiting what is taught accomplishes? Why would we want to limit?
I would say that limiting a person's thought is just for like a group of people to try to develop their, like a person's identity towards what they think. And it's like really frequent nowadays where you see when it comes, like the indoctrination that comes with it is that many people try to eradicate stuff just to make sure that a singular person follows their path. For example, many parents try to get their children to do things they want so they can become, the child can become what the parent wants them to be or stuff like that. And that, the same thing to me, I feel like the same thing's happening with the eradication, not eradication, but the removal of sociology as a core class, because most people don't see the necessity of it. For many people, they believe that just doing the hard stuff, the things that make you develop, like develop your mind, just challenging you is what's important. But at the same time, we have two parts. So we have to be able to think creatively and just like altruistically, as well as thinking about the hard facts. And if you cannot balance between them and you only focus on one thing, you're basically underdeveloping the other part that you need to be able to do. And so the whole thing is that the whole reason why people do that is because either they don't understand the importance of it, or they're trying to develop, like, they're trying to get a person to do things that they want them to do rather than what the person wants, because the person does not have any exposure to it whatsoever.
Okay.
I think the beauty of education is that you're exposed to, like, a bunch of different perspectives. Like, sure, you're being taught material, but you're also in a classroom filled with people with a variety of different perspectives and different backgrounds, different cultures, whatever. So I think, like, it's this exposure to different perspectives, which is what actually makes education, like, really worth it. And, like, it can really help challenge your perspectives and see, like, different point of views, things like that. I see, like, in school, for example, in TOK, Theory of Knowledge, we do debates, and we take on different sides, and we're able to have in-class discussions on a variety of different issues. And we really get to see, like, how each side is being held up by what arguments. And we're really taught to question, like, the authenticity, or if there, whether there's bias or not, or, like, how credible certain sources are which uphold these arguments. And I think overall, like, education is a great way to really, like, challenge your perspective. And I think this is pretty necessary in the development of children and young adults, because we shouldn't follow, like, a specific path when we're that young. Like, we shouldn't follow whatever our parents are telling us directly. Like, we can consider it, but we should also consider different perspectives. And I think, like, even if you're taking a course like sociology, where you may not agree with whatever is being presented, it's a great way to at least be exposed to, like, different perspectives, different material. And I guess overall, that can help with your development of ideas, even if you don't agree with them.
Right. Just having that, at least that exposure. Right. Knowing what they are. Yeah.
Right. I don't think we should completely block out courses just because we don't agree with them. We should still, I think students should still take them even if they don't agree, so they're at least exposed and keep in mind these different ideas.
That's what it is about. That's what education is about, you know? Exposing you. You use that word several times, among, and that's what it is about. Just exposure. You know, I don't think you're trying to indoctrinate anyone. And any other comments? Where do you sit? What do you think?
Yeah, and I think it's really just killing questions, because there's nobody in this world that's going to ask a question about something that they're completely unaware about, right? Mm-hmm. Like, despite the fact that as an IB student at Rutgers, like, I don't plan on pursuing something in sports, right? I don't plan on becoming a basketball player or something. Mm-hmm. But I think everyone in elementary school, you're told to take a PE class. Like, it's not optional. Every kid in elementary school is taking a PE class, right? And I think that allows students to be able to understand, like, oh, is this something that I want to do when I'm older? Like, what happens with, like, this part of this sport? Like, what's about that role? Like, something. Questions always arise when people are exposed to things. And when you're killing that, you're just essentially killing any thoughts about it at all. And I think that kind of says a lot about what people are wanting to do when they make these changes to the curriculums. Okay.
Good point. You raised some good points. Any other perspective one wants to share?
I would say that I think that it's so important that people are well-informed and have their own opinions on different things that are going around them, which is why I say that it's so important to keep up with current events. But I don't think that, well, I think that limitations will directly shape beliefs, but it will affect future generations if limitations do continue and keep happening. Because if we limit what is being taught, then people sometimes they turn to self-studying and, like, keeping themselves updated with things that are going on, and just self-education as well. But then what's the point of going to school and seeking public education if you're not being taught the things that are actually supposed to be useful for everyday life? Like, in my opinion, there's just like
education is just lacking in that sense. If we're limiting what is being taught and censoring out parts of what students can and can't learn, because it's fundamental that we learn everything. Like Amog said, like, we have to have exposure to everything so that we're able to form our own opinions and have our own thoughts of what we think of society.
Well, if removing topics like race and gender, is it about neutrality or is it about control? Because we do control somewhat. If you don't know it, how can you even have an opinion about it if you aren't exposed to it? You know, if you haven't been exposed and you haven't read about it and you haven't talked about it and discussed it, if you're limited, it's like if you don't know how to read. If you keep a group from learning how to read, what does that do?
I think, yeah, this goes back to like what I was saying before. Mm-hmm. I feel like you should at least like put some effort into like getting an understanding of the topic. You don't necessarily have to agree with it. You can still gain an understanding to like come up with like, I guess like how you can counter it or like challenge those ideas or opinions. But I do agree that overall, like, you shouldn't form an opinion on something before actually trying to understand it or like getting as much information about it as possible. And I also think it's important to know like the type of information you're getting, like, mm-hmm. Like if it's biased or if it's leaning a certain way, because it is important for that information to be as unbiased as possible. But overall, I do agree that like you shouldn't form an opinion on something that you don't know a lot about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to say like I'm not well versed in this topic, or I need more information before I can say my opinion. Mm-hmm. Like, that's totally okay, but you shouldn't form an opinion based on limited knowledge, because you never know, like, that limited knowledge may be bias or leaning towards a certain way, or it might just be wrong completely.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Shauna, Grace?
I think it's, sorry.
No, whoever. Go right ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's okay to still voice your opinion, even if you're not like sure if you're right or if you're well-informed enough, because there's nobody in the world that should be 100% sure, like, oh yeah, I definitely know this topic. Because everyone's unsure about a little part of it. There's always uncertainties, right?
Right.
I think it is also important as someone who speaks out to be able to acknowledge and to inform other people about, yeah, actually, I'm not really sure. So I'm telling you this and I'm kind of sure about it. But, you know, you should do your own research. Don't take my word for it. You know, I think it's important for people to be able to acknowledge that other people should find other sources and to be able to understand and tell and be honest with themselves as well. And just say that, you know, I don't know everything and that's okay. But this is my opinion based on what I've heard and what I've experienced.
Well, yeah. Go right ahead. Yes, ma'am.
I think that Kaylee's point really just like highlights exactly like how important education is. Because like the beauty of the world is that we're able to talk to each other and we're able to talk to other people and become educated by them and educate other people. And if we're not, like, when we're younger, we don't have that practice of becoming educated by others and becoming educated on certain topics. We're stuck in our own ways and we're stuck in this like box that we put ourselves in, saying like, oh, my opinion is the only one that can be right. But when we are taught from a young age, oh, this is how we can become more educated on a topic, and this is like information. When we become those informed minds, we're able to talk to other people and we're able to, you know, become educated by others. And I think that's just how, like, and you can start formulating your own opinions. And even when you don't know much about a topic, mm-hmm. then now you can learn about someone mm-hmm. who does. Or when you have more information about a topic than another person, you can share that information. And I think that's how education should be, and like learning about new things should be, and limiting that would only just limit our ability to think and talk to others.
Okay. Well, who should decide what is too controversial for the classroom? Should it be educators? Should it be lawmakers? Should it be students? Should it be parents? Who should decide? Should it be a collective of all of them?
I think it should be the parents, because lawmakers might not have children. So they're not really put into perspective about how these new systems that they make are affecting the children. But, you know, like even as the children, not fully developed, there's a reason that we're being taught things. There's a reason that we're still learning. So I think that the parents should be able to decide it. But obviously, it shouldn't be like a few parents or like a specific region of parents deciding it for everybody. It's very important that you have a diverse group of people who have diverse opinions about it, coming to a consensus about, you know what, this is going to be a good curriculum that's going to help all our children and it's going to benefit everyone. And, you know, at that point, if a majority of people can agree upon it, then likely it is not controversial enough to be harming the children more than benefiting them.
I believe it should be a group collective between parents, teachers, and the students. As Kelly said, the lawmakers probably don't even have the slightest clue or idea on what's happening when most people even do anything about education policy. The only people that even qualify to are lawmakers that even have a background in education, and not many do. But when it comes, the people that should be able to make these policies or make sure these curriculum are the people that are actively within the sphere of education. Parents obviously have students, and most of them are on top of what the child does or what their grades are or stuff like that. Students are actively in the classroom, and they have to be able to do things. And if the student cannot do anything, then it's on the teacher and the school curriculum to make sure that everything's accessible for a student or a majority of students to understand. And then teachers, obviously, they're the number one person to talk about this. They have an education in education. They know how to handle children. They know how to handle these people in general. And with a group collective where everybody develops their own opinion, all of this can go together hand in hand in order to form the curriculum that's necessary for both students and teachers and parents to thrive, because lawmakers are the last resort. They're only there to help pass policy and laws, because nothing can be implemented until there's strict legislation on that. So the only people that should be able to talk about it properly are parents, students, and the teacher.
Okay.
Yeah, I also believe in the collective as well, because some of the most controversial topics today, like climate change and abortion rights, et cetera, things like that, all of those are decided by the people, because it should be what society benefits the most from. And people who are actively involved with society, people who are actually undergoing and learning new things every single day, learning about what's best for them, knowing what's best for them as well, they should be the ones making the decision for what they should be taught and what should be implemented for them and for their success.
Okay. Well, can one fully understand a society, and what we're talking about here is the American society, without studying its divisions? If we can't study everything, how are we going to truly understand? I mean, does that question make sense to me? It's like, well, if we cut out something, then that may be very integral to understanding the full picture, because you've eliminated a piece of it. So again, can one fully understand society without studying all of its divisions?
I mean, that's the whole point about having, you know, like divisions in the government and things like that. It's because nobody, like not a single, a singular person cannot know everything. You know, that's like the whole point about coming together as collective, having these divisions. I think that's also why it's important as individuals to have these courses to gain a general idea, but it's not really possible for, you know, us to know everything in depth about every single topic. It's just we come together as a collective, as a group that's well-rounded.
Yeah, okay. I agree. I feel like it's not really possible to know everything about society. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like that's also unrealistic, which is why we have people who specialize in different parts. And then they come together and they communicate their understanding with each other. And hopefully, like, through that, through these systems, we're able to come up with different conclusions or different ideas as a whole. But yeah, I feel like it's better to have people specialize in different divisions and then come together as a whole, because that way you have experts in certain fields rather than having like one person knowing a little bit about everything. Mm-hmm. Because as we said, like with limited knowledge, we can't really come up with valid conclusions or conclusions that are really like that makes sense overall, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to close this because we always do it. We are 2/3 through the program and we've only discussed one topic. But I had a couple questions I was going to pose to you and you can think about it. Is avoiding controversial topics actually a political act in itself? That's not one question I was thinking about. And at what point does curriculum change become censorship? And we'll have to explore these topics later. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and this is the Politics Wrap session. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
An AI-generated image of Trump resembling a religious Jesus sparked strong reactions about respect, symbolism, and leadership. When politics borrows from religion, where is the line? This last section of 411 Teen, let's look at the using religious imagery. So is using religious imagery in politics a form of expression or of exploitation?
It would definitely be exploitation, since how using the image of God or referencing someone to be God, in my opinion, is highly sacrilegious. The whole point of scriptures and things like that say that there's one God, nobody is similar to him, nobody's above him, nobody's above him. Mm-hmm. And by saying that you have this one individualistic person enacting the idea of being the almighty or of the power is just wrong. It's definitely exploitive, because the same people that compare themselves to God, the same people that act as the messenger of his words, the messenger of the whatever scripture they read, the Bible, the Quran, the book, or whatever they read. And if they enacting themselves or depicting themselves as the person that they follow just shows how inaccurate their own reading of it is. And not only that, but it's how it shows how inaccurate they are when it comes to their followers, because many politicians have fans, super fans, if you might say so yourself, like to say so themselves. And it just sends out the wrong message. It sends out an even more negative message about them to the people that hate them. And it also sends a message to the people that do follow them that essentially makes them dumber. So the whole point of enacting or depicting yourself as God is just sacrilegious in general, and not only that, and it's just plain right dumb and stupid.
Okay. I want to hear from all of you on this. We had several folks, you know, send me emails and want at requesting that you all discuss this. They wanted to know where you sat on this. What was your reaction when you saw Trump as Jesus? He said he was a doctor, but he was being a doctor. I don't know. So let's get into this in this last section. I want to hear from all of you. So do you think religious imagery, is there a place for religious imagery in politics?
I think that there isn't a place for religious imagery in politics because I want to bring up one of the core principles of what our government is built off of, separation of church and state. So our country, we should be guaranteeing religious freedom. And when we're posting pictures of, you know, depicting our president as Jesus, that just literally goes, like, that literally goes through the entire doctrine of separation of church and state. And that just directly does not follow that. And it sort of shows, like, it shows a sort of favoritism or just, like, different ideologies. And it does not show how all religions can be accepted in the country. So I feel like it's just a very peculiar thing that is going on because it goes against a lot of the basic foundations and principles of what the nation was built off of.
Okay. Now I want to hear from all of you. Some of you have been kind of reticent there, but you know, this is something, you know, think about it. How did you feel? What was your response when you saw that, when you heard that?
I mean, it's definitely interesting because I guess they're choosing to, you know, appeal to a certain audience. And that's a very interesting decision to make on their end. I think as a student, just seeing that, I mean, I guess it just says a lot about like the political individual's beliefs, and you are basically like you're basically publicly displaying that this is what they believe in. And it's a very bold statement. And I think that in general, I don't know. It's very interesting.
It is. It really is. I think that's why everybody, you know, I got a lot of requests of have the students talk about that. I haven't heard you all discuss it. So, and it is. You really have to think about it for a while. All right. Amag, I haven't heard from you.
Yeah. Wait. So can you bring up like what exactly the post was again?
The post, you mean what the picture was?
Yeah, yeah, it I was, guess like that in the context.
It was Trump dressed up like Jesus holding his hand over someone, I guess, who was supposed to be sick as if he were healing them. I can't remember anything else. I mean, you might want to pull it up real quick if you can. But and when he did it, he was criticized for it, you know, because he clearly would look like he was supposed to be taking the role of Jesus. And then he says, "Oh no, he wasn't the role. It wasn't Jesus. He was being a doctor, and he was healing." Mm. Okay, that's the way he got out of it, but. Most everybody, and there was a lot of controversy about it. We didn't have a chance to discuss it because you all were having exams or whatever, having papers due at that time. So we didn't get to talk about it. So that's why we're doing it now.
I see. Mm-hmm. I just pulled up the image.
Okay. Okay.
Pretty interesting.
Okay.
I'll give you that. Initial impressions, I can tell AI was used to make this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He said that. He didn't deny that. You know, I think he made it at some ungodly hour, which is what he usually does on Truth Social.
Yeah, I mean, I think initial impressions, like, it's kind of weird because, first of all, I don't think I would uphold, like, anyone to this level of, like, I guess like power. I don't even know how to describe it, but it does seem pretty interesting, and like you can tell like it's for sure appealing to a certain audience. And I guess, like, I don't know. I don't see how this is really appropriate in the political scene. Like, I feel like in politics, you shouldn't uphold someone to this high of a standard. Like, you shouldn't, like, I don't know, you shouldn't see them as a god, because at the end of the day, they're a politician. They're someone that's part of the government. You shouldn't see them in this certain way, if that makes sense.
Well, this particular imagery really sparked outrage. I mean, there was a lot of outrage. You know, of course, his sycophants, you know, explained it away and, you know, tried to lessen the blow. But there was a lot of outrage about it. So that's why I want to know, what do you think? How do you feel? What did that say to you?
No, and I think we're kind of passing over the fact that it's AI, which I think makes a lot of people, when they think about AI,
It was
I think
intentional.
oftentimes,
It was
no,
intentional.
well, I don't really know about that, but
Oh.
when I think of AI, I think of how it's kind of just casual, you know, like I can type something into AI and it just like spawns it out for me. So I think people are really intrigued and taken aback by it because A, it's obviously something that people are taking sensitively, but also B, because it's something that could have like was so casually made and uploaded, you know? Social
Yeah,
media
that's
is
what I'm
so
saying, but it was
accessible.
intentional. This was not a mistake. Trump said, yes, he did it. I mean, is not the debate, okay? Just so you understand. I mean, he's not denying it. He said, yeah, he did it. He used AI. I think that should influence or add to the equation of how we respond.
And
This
I
is a
would.
man who didn't even know how to hold a Bible. Didn't he hold it upside down or backwards or something like that?
Yeah, I would just say it's just so weird that he's trying to paint this picture of himself. And like Haley had said earlier, like cater to this specific audience. And it's so weird that he's trying to portray himself in a godly manner, and he used AI to make it that way. And it's also just the fact that like even though he intentionally made this and he meant to make this like picture of himself, he just like this completely caters to a different audience that like that wants and he wants to depict himself in this sort of way.
Yeah, and seeing how a lot of people started to defend him once he posted this, like his followers, it shows how he's like really like pushing the bounds to what his followers would tolerate. And clearly he like depicts himself as like this divine power. And seeing how people, certain people choose to agree with that and, you know, follow that shows how what he's doing, it's like kind of like working for on certain people, and it's like actually making them like unaware of what's going on and what's happening to them, because some people are choosing to believe this, and some people are choosing like, oh yeah, like he is this great per like power, like at the same level as some would say God is. And I think that just shows how like dangerous it is to start using these like images to depict yourself and depict politicians, because indoctrination is real in certain cases. And I feel like people defending this behavior shows how like we can literally see how you can depict yourself in that way and people would still support you.
You know what? I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, and like maybe he was just trying to make a silly little post. But the problem is, like, a lot of people, like a lot of his followers, take this stuff seriously, and I don't know, like it, like maybe his intention was just to make like a silly post, but I guess the problem is more with his followers. Like, some people really do see him as a god, and they take like his stances like very, very seriously, and I don't know, I guess they really do see him like this.
Well, yeah. Oh, go right ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say that this just kind of reminds me of like, I don't want to say, but I'll say this sort of reminds me of like how kings used to portray themselves as well. Mm-hmm. And this just kind of like ties back to the entire No Kings movement of when people would protest against the same man that we're talking about. But when he's trying to depict himself in this way, yeah, it does really feel like he's trying to push this out towards his MAGA fan base and just rally that reaction within them. And then those people have a reaction that kind of falls like dominoes within the entire MAGA fan base. And it ultimately just ends up with praising Trump.
Well, what responsibilities do leaders have when using powerful religious or cultural imagery? Do they have any responsibility? You know, these are leaders. They're in the front. Everybody's, you know, eyes are on them. So do they have a responsibility when they use this type of imagery?
I think they definitely do have. They're the people, well, in this case, Trump, the person who is considered the face of the nation being the president, they have the responsibility to uphold a certain value to the people that live in this country and the people mm-hmm. that they're governing, because they should be the representation of what the country want and what the people want, because that's literally the entire principle of government. So when the person who is supposed to be looking after people in the country is more looking towards things that would benefit themselves, I think that we've run into a major roadblock and a huge, huge mm-hmm. systemic issue.
Another thing is, I'm just thinking, we only have a couple minutes, but can AI kind of, I guess, blur the line between reality and propaganda in politics? Because that's, you all made me think about that. Where is the line? Where do we draw the line between, you know, the reality and the propaganda that is presented?
I think it depends on how it's being used. Okay. So in my eyes, the whole idea of anybody mm-hmm. being portrayed as God, I would see that as propaganda, depending on whether I like them or not. If, say, I was some crazy fan, I would be like, oh, this might be true because I'm just blinded by it. But on the other side, if I just like hated a person, and I'll be like, oh, look at them being all high and mighty and things like that. I think the whole thing that differentiates between how the usage of AI is classified as propaganda or not, it just depends on the message that other people see when they're looking at an image.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just the use of AI being on there. Now, for me, if I see any political leader using the use of AI, I would say, A, first of all, it's not environmentally friendly. 2, B, it's just plain lazy on the fact that they couldn't even bother to get somebody to actually like draw something for them. And it just shows how incompetent people can be. And so the whole purpose of AI is, the whole thing that makes AI propaganda is usage and just how people try to portray themselves when they use it.
Okay.
I have a slightly different take. I think as public figures, remotely anything can be propaganda. Like, kind of like Ashana kind of mentioned, mm-hmm. it depends on who sees it. But that's really the purpose of propaganda, because if someone is already on your side, there's really no point in using propaganda to try and cater to that audience, right? Because they already believe in you. They're already on your side. So it's really just to cater to that other audience, to yeah. keep your audience, you know, attached to you and to attract another audience. So really, because nothing in this world is completely neutral. Therefore, everything that a public figure expresses is in some ways propaganda, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we're really just about out of time, but if somebody has a quick comment I'll take it. It had to be real quick, like 15 seconds. But another thing just to think about for your generation, you know, these are the kinds of things that you are going to be confronted with. This is what you're going to be in your face. But we will talk about it later because it's time out. And to my panelists, I appreciate your willingness to question, to challenge, and to think deeper. That's where change begins, and I appreciate you. Much appreciation to my listening audience for the privilege of your time and your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance provided by Taylor Cox. If you would like to participate in the 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Team at wfsu.org.